This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. This year, we're celebrating Studio 360's first decade on the air. And as part of the festivities, we and HarperCollins are publishing the first Studio 360 book. It's drawn from the thousands of conversations I've had on the show about creativity and art and life over the last 10 years. It's called Spark: How Creativity Works. Spark was written by Julie Burstein, the executive producer of Studio 360 for many years. She pored over our archives to find the stories for the book, and she is here with me now. Julie, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here again.
So Spark is not just, as you know better than anyone, a collection of transcripts of interviews. It really can be read as a guidebook, a kind of collection of case studies about how creative people are made. One of the chapters is about childhood, something I ask almost every guest in here about. Do most of these successful, super creative people you find know from a very young age that they wanted to do creative work for a living?
You know, when I was looking at the interviews and listening to them, I found that there were two categories. There were some people who knew almost from birth that they were going to be artists, and others who had these accidental moments in childhood that percolated through their work and really led them to the path of being a writer or a filmmaker. One of the people who's in the former category, who found out that he was going to be an artist very early, is the great sculptor Richard Serra. And I say found out because I'm not sure he knew, but his mother knew that he was going to be a sculptor very, very early. This is what he had to say.
I don't know if you know anything about Jewish mothers, but they're very important. And she was very, very insistent right away that I think in the third grade, I had a teacher who pulled my mother into class, and they had all of my drawings up around the room, circled the periphery of the room. And she called my mother in and pointed it out, and she said, "You should start taking this child to museums and to encourage what he's already doing." And so my mother totally got on to the program and started taking me to museums very early and introducing me as Richard the artist.
She also introduced her other son as the lawyer, and he did become a very famous lawyer.
So in addition to stage mothers, there are gallery mothers,
I guess. And lawyer mothers, too, I guess.
Another artist, one of Richard Serra's contemporaries, in fact, is Chuck Close, who also thought of himself as an artist when he was a little kid, but he struggled with what we now call a learning disability.
Although in the 40s and 50s, nobody knew from learning disabilities, I was just dumb.
And what Chuck Close says after this is that the way that he learned to make art kind of made use of his learning disability. He was dyslexic. He also couldn't understand the whole, so he had to really focus on parts. He also had face blindness, which is interesting because most of his work is portraiture.
No, I remember when he was in here and I was talking to him, and I'd met him before. I've met him many times. Each time, it's a reintroduction
because absolutely.
He doesn't recognize you.
Yeah, and the way that he memorized his family's faces was by painting them. He also said, though, as a kid, art was really a way for him to connect to other people because he couldn't do it through school.
I think I learned early on that since I also wasn't athletic and I couldn't run or catch a ball or throw a ball, that I needed to do something to keep people around me. So I began doing magic acts and puppet shows, and I began to realize that one of the things that I could do that my friends couldn't do was draw. And I was lucky enough to have the support of my family and to feel like I had something to say, even though I didn't say it in the traditional way.
One of the things that surprised me as I listened to these interviews was that there's a theme not just of knowing that you're an artist at a very early age, but of this idea that the thing that is the most difficult for you actually leads you to your work. And the great novelist Richard Ford, the Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist, he talked about having such a hard time reading as a kid because he was seriously dyslexic.
I was slow to learn to read and still to this day can't read silently much faster than I can read aloud. But there were a lot of benefits to being dyslexic for me, because when I finally did reconcile myself to how slow I was going to have to do it, then I think I came very slowly into an appreciation of all those qualities of language and of sentences that are not just the cognitive aspects of language, the syncopations, the sounds of words, what words look like, where paragraphs break, where lines break. I mean, I wasn't so badly dyslexic that I was disabled from reading. I just had to do it really slowly. And as I did, lingering on those sentences as I had to linger, I fell heir to language's other qualities, which I think has helped me write sentences.
That's such a great idea, that the very difficulty of reading sort of slowed him down and made him relish each bit of writing. And it's also, I think, a great point about creativity in general in all of our lives. It may be something that comes easy in a particular medium or business or whatever, but it also needs to present a certain challenge, or what's the fun?
Richard Ford also talked about something that I heard over and over as I listened to your conversations, which is there was something that happened that came up years later in his work. And for Ford, in his latest novel, The Lay of the Land, there's this moment when Frank Bascom, his main character, suddenly is remembering his mom running over the family cat. And that actually was something that happened to Richard Ford when he was 6 years old. He was at home by himself. He watched his mom back out of the driveway, right over their cat, and was left with the cat in its death throes.
And I picked the little cat up, and I ran next door where there was this old Civil War veteran. And I ran up to him, and I said, "Colonel something or other," I said, my cat's been run over." And he was, of course, addle-pated as could be. And he said to me, he said, "I think you've got a Persian there." He said, "But looks like something's wrong with it." I've known that story all my life. It's just, but I haven't ever thought that it would ever find its way into anything I wrote. I would sometimes tell it to people. Told it to people for decades. Suddenly, a moment comes in the middle of this book that it seemed to fit in perfectly, and there it was.
Well, that's certainly how, in my experience, writing works. Is you have this cupboard, this filled with stuff that you know that has happened, and you're never sure that you need that can in the back of the third shelf in the cupboard until you're doing something and it comes up. I also empathized greatly with Ford when he told me that story, because my mother also ran over and killed one of our cats. Yes, the so-called baby kitty at the time.
Oh.
But does this mean that, I hope we're not saying that absent some traumatic event or disability, people don't become creative?
Thank goodness there are also stories about wondrous things that happen in childhood. And I think the key thing is just keeping your eyes open to whatever happens. And for the filmmaker Mira Nair, she talks about a moment that happened. She was growing up in this small town in India, a provincial town where her father worked. And she and her brothers played in the streets all the time. And there was a moment that really changed her.
Traveling folk theater would come through the town, and I would go off and see this great battles of good and evil by two people in a school field with no props, but with a lot of, you know, passion and hashish as well. And it was just
passion and hashish.
Yeah, everyone was stoned out of their heads, and it was amazing. You know, the folk tales of Mahabharata and Ramayana, the two holy books, the epics that everything comes out of in India, they say. After seeing that jatra, the folk theater, I knew I wanted to get on, you know, and perform.
I think that's so important. And again, if parents are thinking, I want to maximize my children's creativity, simply...
The violin lessons are not enough.
Are not enough. And you never know. Take them to the city you live near. Take them to the forest you live near. I mean, who knows where they might find something that'll change their lives.
For you, what was it like for you growing up, Kurt? Did your mom say, "Here's my son, the writer," or?
No, she sort of did. And a key moment was when I was in third grade, I wrote an essay for Thanksgiving that was bogus. But it was for Thanksgiving.
That sounds like your later work too. Sometimes.
What, bogus?
maybe not bogus.
And it was about how the most important things are oxygen, freedom, and God. And already at eight, I had my doubts about God. So, but she thought this was wonderful and sent it to the local newspaper in Omaha, which published it with my picture. And really, it was all about kind of this egomaniacal revelation. What? I can write? It'll be published? Everyone will see it? Okay, this looks good.
And here we are.
And here we are. Julie, this is a rich, rich trove, this book, Spark, and I can't wait to talk to you more next week about it. Thanks.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
And we'd also love to get everybody involved in this conversation, whether you've been listening to Studio 360 for 10 years or just started this week. Please weigh in here. What was the moment in childhood that made you who you are? Tell us about it at studio360.org. And while you're there, you can hear more from the interviews you heard bits of today And you can read an excerpt from our Studio 360 book, Spark, How Creativity Works. And, of course, you can find out how to get a copy of Spark.